Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant where you can jump up and down and announce to the world, yes, I'm in. And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Quick reminder, if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/82, and you can leave a comment with your question. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. We're developing a wonderfully supportive and collaborative community on Accepted, so feel free to comment or ask a question. Now, let's turn to our interview. And before I actually introduce our guest for today, I want to tell you a little bit of a story. About a year ago, a little over a year ago, a woman called me. Her son was a college senior who desperately wanted to go to medical school and become a doctor. The woman told me of her son's talents and dreams, as well as the challenges he has faced and, to a certain extent, overcome. However, those challenges had left their mark on his MCAT and GPA, especially since, and that mark was particularly important because he wanted to apply to U.S. allopathic medical schools. The mother was seemed like a really nice lady, and she just told me how discouraged her son was and how she simply wanted to help him achieve his dreams. I referred her and her pre-med son to Accepted's consultant, Alicia McNeese-DeMoncar, our guest today. Alicia has been working for Accepted since 2012, and previous to that was the director of the post-bac program at UC Davis. Now, getting back to my story, and how did our pre-med do with Alicia's assistance? Well, she advised him to apply to post-bac programs, and he has gotten into 6 out of 7 post-bac programs that he applied to. And his hopes now of becoming a doctor, they are alive and well. Now, this story is particularly relevant because Accepted just published Alicia's new book, The Definitive Guide to Pre-Medical Post-Baccalaureate Programs, the handbook for career changers and academic record enhancers who want a chance at medical school. That's a mouthful. In her previous appearance on Accepted at info.accepted.com/23, if you want to go back and review it, Alicia and I covered medical school admissions. Today, we're diving into the post-bac world. Alicia, welcome back to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. I'm excited to participate.
Great. Now, to my knowledge, your book, The Definitive Guide to Pre-Med Post-Baccalaureate Programs, I'm not going to give the whole title, is the only book exclusively devoted to post-bac admissions. And am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. I searched today, actually, on Google and Amazon, and I can confirm, as of today, that it is the only book on pre-medical post-baccalaureate programs in existence.
Great. And what motivated you to write the book?
I wanted to write the book to give students hope who are non-traditional applicants, who maybe took time off after completing the bachelor's degree, who are parents, who maybe are career changers who didn't take the pre-med requirements, or students who need to improve their undergraduate GPA. So I wanted the book to inspire people who weren't sure if they could do it with stories of students who have done it and with the different pathways that they could take to reach medical school successfully.
Okay, now let's start with some basics about post-bac programs. Who should consider, or when should people consider, a post-bac program? What's the purpose there? And I know they're different. It can be different for different people, so you can go into that a bit.
There are a lot of different options. So if you're currently an undergraduate student and you're not happy with your grades, there typically is more financial aid available to you if you do a fifth year or a double major. So if you're pretty early on or midway through your undergraduate education and you know that you need help with study skills or improving your GPA, ask for help now. Go to your academic achievement center on campus, get tutors, do whatever you need to do to start improving those grades immediately. Becoming an active learner is essential to taking charge of your education and becoming that straight-A student that you are absolutely capable of becoming. It's about going back to the basics, study skills, managing your time, looking at what you're eating, whether you're exercising. It's about looking at those habits that are helping you and those habits that are holding you back. So if you're an undergraduate and you have the option of doing a double major, there will be more financial aid available to you if you simply take more science coursework and do perhaps a fifth year or take a little bit more time to finish your bachelor's degree. But ending your bachelor's with an increasing trend in your GPA is absolutely essential. It's one of the most important things you can do. So if you're an undergraduate now, making sure that you're doing whatever you need to do to have an increasing trend in your GPA is essential. I've seen selection committees not go take an applicant's application any further simply because of the GPA. So that alone can actually disqualify you for a lot of programs. So if you have already graduated, you may want to consider a formal post-bac program because those can provide the most support. Often those programs provide assistance with MCAT preparation as part of a summer program. They provide study skill support. They will assist you in course selection. You might get priority registration if it's a formal program on a campus. So there are a lot of benefits to doing a formal program. And there are programs that are geared towards students who are career changers. The vast majority of programs are in support of career changers at this time. And then there are programs geared towards students who need to improve their undergraduate record, as well as students who are underrepresented or considered socioeconomically disadvantaged. So there are definitely programs geared towards those specific areas. To determine which direction you want to go, it would be important to look at your record and look at the strengths and weaknesses, whether you know that studying for the MCAT and taking it on your own is something that you can do if you're good at standardized test taking, or whether you would benefit from the support of a group, as well as working perhaps with an educational psychologist, which some programs offer. So there are a lot of different possibilities and different ways to approach a post-bac, but it's basically for students who know that they need support. And if you know that you do well studying on your own and you have started earning A's in your courses, doing informal post-bac work, simply registering and taking courses on a campus on your own, can be another route to go if you're confident in your study skills and you don't need the additional support. Does that answer all of your questions, Linda?
Pretty much. And I was just thinking, you've mentioned the informal post-bac programs. There are obviously programs aimed at academic record enhancers. There are programs aimed at career changers, which you say is the majority at this point. And I know from your book, you also talk about single focus programs, multiple focus programs. Is there a way to give an overview of the field and some of the different programs?
Yes, I'd say if you're an undergraduate, considering a fifth year is an option at that point. If you've already graduated, you could consider, especially if your undergraduate GPA needs work, you could consider formal programs or completing informal postbaccalaureate coursework at any four-year college or institution, or even community college if you're a career changer and you just need the pre-med requirements. And then for students who already have a strong undergraduate record, but who just simply need an edge or if you want more preparation for medical school, the special master's degree programs are another option. And some of them are located on medical school campuses, so you'd be taking your classes with first-year med students. And the benefit of that is that you'd be earning a master's degree, as well as, if accepted into that school, the units you're taking could count towards your MD ultimately. So it's a nice way to give yourself additional preparation and perhaps accelerate your medical education in the process while earning a master's degree in expertise in a particular area if a research project is involved. So those are the three main possibilities. And within post-bac programs, there are single focus programs that allow you just to take coursework, dual focus programs for students who need more activities or clinical experience or research. So those programs allow you to do coursework as well as participate in activities often that they set up or collaborate with through their medical schools or local hospitals. And then multiple focus programs are those that assist you with MCAT prep, study skill support. They're more comprehensive and provide more support in a lot of different areas. And then there are things like career changer programs geared specifically towards students who need the pre-med requirements, and those are typically 2 years based on the requirements. And then there are such things as conditional acceptance programs, and those basically have agreements with medical school campuses that if you earn a certain GPA by a certain date, you'll be given either a guaranteed interview or guaranteed acceptance into their program.
I assume those.
I think that covers the overview of possibilities.
I assume the conditional acceptance ones are very popular.
Oh, yes. They are, and I was able to get interviews from one of the programs that's very popular. But, yeah, those are definitely, they receive a high number of applicants, and it's good to get guidance when submitting applications to those because they are so competitive.
All right. Now, your book contains excellent advice on how to choose and then get accepted to post-bac programs. It's a handbook, a guidebook, but you also chose to include, and you just mentioned it actually, interviews in the book, interviews with former post-bac students and with program directors at many different post-bac programs. Why did you want to include these interviews, which are fascinating? That's probably my favorite part of the book.
I wanted to share these interviews because as a former post-bac program director, the best part of my job, the part of my job that I enjoyed the most easily was working with students. And I think that for people who are considering applying to medical school and who are intimidated by the process, I think once you meet a few of these individuals and once you get some insight on how much they enjoy working with students and how much they love helping and seeing people be successful in the process, I think once students get a chance to get to know admissions professionals and directors and advisors, that they'll see that these are wonderful people who are here to support you on your path. And the more that you open up and open yourself up to the possibility of finding the right resources, that you will find them, that they are out there for you. So I wanted students to gain a sense of how approachable and how it is possible to apply and get accepted into these programs and to be able to get into medical school. So it was wonderful doing the interviews. I was so inspired by all the people that I had a chance to talk with. They love working with students, and I hope that the people who read the book get a sense of how approachable and enthusiastic these people are about what they do.
I agree. They certainly should. I also found very inspiring, the profound helpfulness of what you're talking about and the desire to support the students in the program certainly was lovely to read about, and it really was good. But I think what I found most remarkable actually was the student interviews. Some of the hardships that the students had overcome, some of the dedication that some of them displayed was really awe-inspiring. But do you?
It was a blast reconnecting with some of the students I hadn't heard from in a little while.
Uh-huh.
For example, Dr. Estelle Williams' interview, she had just graduated from medical school last spring when I interviewed her, and she's now a general surgeon.
Wow.
And she's going to return to Oakland to train, which is where she's from. And I'm so thrilled that she's living the dream, that she's doing what she always wanted to do that she never thought possible. I think you get a real sense from her interview how she put one foot in front of the other, and as with the other interviews, it's just about, you know, staying focused and not letting people who might discourage you do that, or, you know, finding ways around the obstacles that appear in your path. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun doing those student interviews. I feel so lucky to know so many inspirational people.
Do you have a favorite interview in the book?
That's like asking me to choose between my children.
I don't think I could.
Yeah, I don't think I could say which one I like most because they all are just so powerful and being a part of the process and helping each of those students through the application process and seeing them be successful and seeing how not only their lives have changed but the lives of their families and the opportunities that they now have available as doctors,
yeah.
It's just humbling. So I love every interview.
Right.
Some of my favorite parts of the book.
I know. This was before you actually joined Accepted, but Cindy at one point worked with an applicant applying to medical school, and he'd grown up like in the city projects in the Bronx or something like this. And he got accepted to medical school. He is now a practicing physician, and he now wanted to help his brother. I don't know if it was applying to medical school or another kind of professional program. It might have been medical school, and he came back. But it's not just that he made it. He's now, you know, paying it forward, essentially, and he's become a role model for his younger brother and probably for other family members. So
beautiful.
That definitely makes our work a lot more satisfying. Now, you mentioned specialized master's programs a moment ago, and typically are those like the people who participate in those programs, they're getting a master's degree as they demonstrate their fitness or qualifications for medical school. Do they usually get a master's in public health? Do they get an MS in biology? I mean, do most of them actually go on to medical school, or does that become a terminal degree? What usually happens with those people?
So there are programs, special master's degree programs, geared specifically towards getting students into medical school. And those are actually listed as post-bac programs. Even on their program website, they typically have names that incorporate post-bac program in the title. And so those are pretty easy to identify. I have a complete list of all SMPs in the United States in the index of the book. And they're broken down in terms of one-year and two-year programs. So basically, the one-year programs are geared more towards med school preparation. And those programs are often called medical sciences master's degree, or you know, they'll have something like medical sciences in the title, or master in biology or anatomy physiology. The two-year programs are more geared towards being terminal career degrees, as you mentioned. The two-year programs often involve a one-year research project as part of that degree, and that prepares students for a career in the research field, and then some of the students do continue on to medical school, but the two-year degree programs are more geared towards careers in research, and perhaps people go on to PhDs after that. But the one-year programs, SMPs, are more specifically focused on getting people into medical school, and the ones that are most successful are those that are often connected to medical school campuses that can guarantee interviews or have conditional acceptance linkage agreements with the program. So those are the main types of special master's degree programs.
This is the time of year when applicants who applied optimistically over the summer are not getting the interview calls and perhaps facing the reality that they may not get in this time. What should those people who may be in the process of getting rejected do at this point? Should they sit tight and wait and see if they do get the interview call and the acceptance, or should they start making plans in case they are rejected?
Well, no news is good news at this point, because sometimes people can get accepted as late as, I've seen this happen, as the first week that classes begin. I had one student get an acceptance from the waiting list a week before classes began, and she had to relocate at the last minute. So I have seen it happen where people get pulled on to the, you know, from the waiting list and get an acceptance very, very late. So no news is always good news at this point. However, it doesn't hurt to have a plan B, and post-bac programs are a wonderful plan B because you can start the application process. Most of them are in the spring, so you can already begin to start filling out applications and then, you know, sending your letters of recommendation and transcripts to the programs. Each, because there's not a standardized application for post-bac programs, you'll need to apply to each individual program, and you'll need to be mindful that they all have different deadlines. But the applications are similar, so most of them require one personal statement or, you know, a couple essay questions. So they will be similar, it's just that you'll have to submit different applications for all the different programs.
No problem.
So I think this is a good time to start looking at what programs would fit for you, you know, what you would need to become a stronger applicant.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do, hopefully you won't, but once you do get rejections from schools, you can ask for feedback on your application. So if you're really struggling to know what you would need to reapply or to be successful, asking for a review or feedback on your application can be a really fantastic way to start, and even getting a consultation with one of the accepted.com editors or consultants is a wonderful way to start, just because you can look at, okay, what were the strengths in my application, and then what things might be holding my application back, and of those, what can I change now, what can I actively do? So if you're missing clinical experience, you can go out and get some clinical. There's lots of different ways that you can start strengthening your application, but I do think having a plan B can be an empowering way for you to go through that waiting process, and knowing that you do have other options can help you feel more secure that even though you might not get accepted this cycle, that it's something that, you know, you can work towards in the future. And strategically, you know, knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are, and by increasing your chances of success by going about that process strategically in a way that's going to help you be successful.
What do you feel are the one or two, whatever you feel is critical number, qualities applicants must demonstrate to be accepted to a post-bac or specialized master's program?
I would say resilience is huge, especially as a non-traditional applicant. You know, most of the students who apply as non-traditional have overcome significant obstacles in their background, and you really are heroic. And so you want to make sure that you let your reviewers know, or the admissions professionals know, you know, what you've had to overcome in your life. So opening up in your application essays about, you know, how you have struggled and overcome many obstacles can be very helpful. So showing and demonstrating resilience is extremely important. And I would say flexibility, that we want students who are able to adapt and who can switch up their strategy when needed and adapt to any professor, any class, and that's what you'll need to do in medical school. So I would say resilience and flexibility, and, you know, being someone who's collaborative and who works well as a team, because most medical schools are using small group learning methods, and, you know, that's a huge component of what your medical education will be composed of.
Okay. Well, your book is really a fantastic overview of the field. You have the advice chapters, you know, how to get in, how to prepare, what are the post-bac options, the index lists all the post-bac programs in the U.S., and even includes suggested reading list for improving study skills. And the book concludes with a succinct chapter on how to make the most of the post-bac year. Again, do you have a favorite piece of advice on making the most of the post-bac year?
I do. I think going back to the basics is so essential. And one of my very good friends who has a PhD in physics, I asked him, you know, what helped you, you know, get a PhD in that field? What drove you to go that far in your education? You know, how did you study? What set you apart as a student? And he said something I'll never forget. He said that, "I learned to study what I didn't know." And it's such a simple thing, but it's essential. Most students, and I'm guilty of doing this too, will study what they already know because it's comforting, yeah, and it's easy, right? And you feel like, oh, I got this homework assignment done because, you know, I knew all of it, and it wasn't a stretch, it wasn't a challenge. But when you start being able to accurately self-assess your knowledge and identify those holes or those gaps in your understanding of the material. And when you're able to strategically focus your attention on those and work with study groups or go to office hours, when you start becoming an active learner and finding out how to learn that information in a way that is most efficient for you, that's, I think, one of the best pieces of advice I think anybody could ever give a student.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, really profound for all its simplicity.
Yeah, I mean, it covers all disciplines, and I think it does set apart the average student from, right, the straight-A student or the graduate-level student.
Right. I have a grandson right now that's having a little trouble with arithmetic, and he'll say, it's so hard, it's so hard, it's too hard. And my husband and I will tell him, well, when something's hard, you have to try harder.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable when you're trying to learn something that you
right.
you don't understand completely. Or yeah, it's placing yourself in a position of vulnerability and you're touching the limits of your knowledge. But it's when you're able to explore those limits and expand them, that's exciting.
Yeah, especially the expansion
part. And that's what you want to do in medical school. So the way you study now, right, will guide and you'll be establishing the lifestyle habits that you'll have in medical school. So it's really important to play with metacognition. Think about the way you think. You know, think about the way you study.
Sounds good. Alicia, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I think you've written a fantastic book that really belongs on the shelf of any and every post-bacc student. It's available on Amazon and also accepted in both Kindle and paperback versions. So, listener, if you would like to learn more about Alicia, her work, and her outstanding book, you can find links to all the above, and that'll be at info.accepted.com/82. If you just want to go grab a copy of her book, it's The Definitive Guide to Pre-Medical Post-Baccalaureate Programs. You can go to www.postbacguide.com. postbacguide.com. Listener, thank you too for joining Alicia McNeese-Namankar and me for AST's 82nd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Doing so helps us spread the word about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you leave 5-star feedback. So if you think AST deserves those 5 shiny stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/82 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.